Welcome to the Hustle Sanely podcast, a show where we are breaking up with unhealthy hustle culture and redefining what it means to be productive. I'm your host and new productivity BFF, Jess Massey. Around here, we believe that productivity is so much more than just checking a million things off of a never-ending to-do list. I am obsessed with teaching you how to prioritize your mental health and the important relationships in your life while you pursue your goals. I'm here to help you ditch that feeling of constant overwhelm and cultivate an intentional life by getting your mindset right, getting clear on your vision, and creating a schedule that aligns with your actual priorities. If you want to learn how to live a peacefully productive life, then you're going to want to stick around. Let's get into today's episode. Hello, friends, and welcome back to the Hustle Sanely podcast. It is the fourth week of the month, which if you've been around here for a while, you know that means that we have a guest on with us today. We are joined by Jess Matley. Yes, it does sound a lot like Jess Massey, but I promise it is a different person. Jess Matley is an HR professional turned career coach and speaker on a mission to help women experience success and fulfillment in their careers with clarity, confidence, and strategy. She teaches her clients to identify and land their next dream role through evidence-based assessments, attention-grabbing resumes, memorable interview strategies, and captivating professional brand stories. Her approach can be best described as strengths-based and action-oriented with a sprinkle of humor. Jess actually presented earlier this month inside of the BFF membership as our Q3 guest expert. And I cannot get over all of the value that she brought to the community on choosing and landing your dream career. It was honestly so incredible, you guys. So of course, I am pumped for you to hear our conversation in this episode of the podcast. You're definitely going to want something to take notes with for this one. Jess is such a good teacher and she explains things with such good analogies and examples. Like, I'm telling you right now, you are going to want to take notes. So get something to take notes with and let's jump into my conversation with Jess. Hi, Jess. Welcome to the Hustle Sanely podcast. I am so, so excited that you're here. We're going to start off with the hardest question of them all. Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, who you are, what are your most important roles in life? What are you passionate about? All that kind of good stuff.
Absolutely. First of all, hi, I am so excited to be here. And my name is Jess Matley. And that is a hard question, right? What am I passionate about? I would say at the forefront, I'm passionate about helping women identify, pursue, and really land their next best role so they can experience successful and fulfilling careers. People might describe me as an encourager of dreams. I would see that role play out in my personal relationships, in my coaching methods. I'm an avid learner. Like if there is a book about the history of salt, sure, why not? Okay. I think that role really presents itself, you know, in my personal coaching style and also in the way that I experience the world. I just want to know all about it. I'm also a dog mom. I have a little sweetheart who's going to be 13 in September. Her name is Allie. I know.
One of ours is turning 10 this year. And I kind of got emotional when I realized that he was hitting like double digits. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. Everything is fine. Everything is fine.
I mean, I have a preteen on my hands. How do you think I feel? I'm like, I would say I'm also a non-official part-time karaoke singer. I sing it like it's my part-time job and it's not. So those are probably some of the most important
roles. That also tells me that you're very brave because I definitely do not have the courage to do karaoke. So that is another character trait that I am gathering that you have.
We're going to find a song for you. There's a song for everyone.
Amazing. Well, Jess, again, I am just so excited that you're here. I love your energy. You just like radiate so much joy and positivity. And I really do feel like you are the perfect personality to speak into this kind of a thing because you're a comforting presence. And I feel like this can kind of be a vulnerable topic for some people, especially I feel like the older we get, the more vulnerable we feel when it comes to kind of digging into what our dreams are or shifting careers. So I know that people can't see us, they can only hear us, but I just need you guys to know that Jess just has the most warm, inviting, welcoming presence. So this is a safe place. Like, take her word, whatever she says, I'm telling you, like, you need to listen to her. So we're going to do a few just kind of fun rapid fire questions just so you can get to know her a little bit better. And then we're going to dig into the juicy stuff. So, okay, Jess, what book are you currently reading or podcast are you currently loving? And I'm very excited to hear this answer since you just said you would read a book about the history of Saul if it was available.
Yeah. So I don't know about you, but I always read one book for fun and one book to learn.
I do as well.
And a book I just finished was The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. Loved it.
One of my favorites that I read last year. Such a good book. Oh, I love that one too.
And if you read it with a career lens, I'm telling you, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And to learn, I'm typically learning about strengths-based models. Or for example, I'm currently reading Strengths-Based Leadership by Gallup because I'm a certified strengths coach through Gallup. So I feel like that's always like on the forefront of my learning. It's how can I help empower someone to be more strengths-based in their decision-making? So that's what I'm learning. That's my learning book at the moment.
Awesome. I love that you call it a learning book because I just say like, oh, I read one fiction and then one nonfiction. And I'm like, wait a second. I like that spin on words there, like my learning book. That's awesome. Okay. So the next question, what is your current go-to Starbucks or coffee order? I know not everybody is a Starbucks kind of gal. So what is your go-to order, either Starbucks or just coffee?
I am a coffee human. So every month, except the month of December, my go-to is a sugar-free latte, sugar-free vanilla latte at kids temperature. That's the weird twist on it.
I have never heard that before.
Oh, yes. I need it to be like lukewarm.
I did not even know you could order it like that. That's amazing.
Because you're an adult. And why would you do that?
And so I'm assuming in December you go for like a peppermint mocha kind of vibe or something.
I wish. I actually go for a white peppermint mocha. Okay. Is my jam.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it. Okay. Do you know your Enneagram number?
I do. I'm a 3. And if I'm being specific, I'm a 3 with a 2 wing.
Perfect. I'm a 3 wing 4. So we're kind of on the same page there.
Yeah.
And then, okay, last little rapid fire question. What is one product that you are obsessed with right now? And you can take this any direction that you want to take it.
Oh, well, I wish people could see me because I'm currently holding up my Hustle.
I love it.
I'm telling you. So I'm holding up my 2022 Peacefully Productive Planner. And this is, I got the weekly version and I should get this thing insured. Like that's how much I use it. And if I lost it, I'd be in big trouble. So I love that. I'm also loving, and this is strange, an AM FM radio. I bought just like a $20 AM FM radio on Amazon, and it's really helped me stay disconnected from my phone when I'm trying to push through like very important tasks. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm listening to something on my phone, I'm going to be more inclined to touch it.
Totally.
With an AM FM. And for some of you, you have to Google what that means.
I was going to say, yeah.
It's a box that music comes out of. Sound comes out. You cannot fast forward. You cannot change the song.
Can't get on the internet.
You just have to listen to the next song. And it's really kind of helped me stay present.
Yeah, that's awesome. It reminds me of something that's on my radar too, that I'm wanting to pick up sooner rather than later, an actual alarm clock because I use my phone and I do keep it in the bathroom. So it's like not right next to my bed, but I love the idea of like disconnecting in the evenings and literally leaving my phone in a different, completely different part of the house whenever we go into the bedroom. So I've been looking at the little Hatch alarm clocks, and that reminds me of that. It's just another way to like disconnect and just kind of be a little bit more present and a little bit more focused. So I love that. Okay. I am so excited to jump into this conversation. I always feel a little bit guilty because I'm like, dang, I have like some good little nuggets that I chat about with people before I actually hit record. So sorry to everybody who's listening, but we're going to tie them all in and bring them all in. But I'm, like I said, I'm just so excited to chat about this topic because I feel like there is such a need for it. I shared with Jess before I hit record that I am a chronic career hopper. Hustle Sanely is actually the longest running career that I have ever had, which is it'll be 4 years in September. And I'm 32. Like, I spent my 20s just hip hopping all over the place, but I didn't really feel bad about it. I know a lot of people, they carry a lot of like guilt and shame, and we can kind of get into that. But I've always just been very, very exploratory. Is that a word? English? Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. Exploratory when it comes to just like my career. And I know that's a privilege that I have. I've always kind of been in the place where I'm able to kind of juggle multiple jobs so that I can kind of just see what's out there and, you know, kind of explore, like I said. And so, people tend to ask me for advice when it comes to hopping careers. And while I'm so happy to talk about my experience and share just like my personal journey, I don't really have like frameworks and advice for people to follow to kind of launch into a brand new career themselves. So that's why I'm so excited to have Jess here today. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. And we're just going to jump right in. So I have to ask this question first, because mostly I want to know for myself, how did you become a career strategist and coach?
I mean, that could be as long as a Barbara Walters special, let me tell you, but not only do our names sound alike, but
like
that
eerily alike,
but that background you just shared of, I'm kind of multidisciplinary. I have a skill set that allows me to contribute in different ways. That is how I found my way to career coaching myself. And it's funny, because when I think about who I had to become to be a career coach today, I had to equally unbecome things and shed ideas of what I thought a career path meant and looked like. And the best way to describe it is way back in high school, a long time ago, I just thought you pick a career and you take, I don't know, a test, or someone tells you what to do, maybe your guidance counselor, and you stick with it and you grow in it. But the truth is, the person that you are when you most likely choose that first role isn't the person you'll be forever. And it would be like asking me to pick my favorite song in high school and I could never change it.
Oh,
like,
my gosh. Yes. That's such a good example.
Although, I mean, it could be in sync for the rest of my life.
Right,
that's fine.
Right.
But I started to learn that careers were actually there to meet my need as much as I was there to meet their need. And so I went to college with the intention to be a grief counselor, got my undergrad in psychology. And not because I had experience or because I fully knew what a grief counselor did. It was actually a very strategic, unscientific way that I came up with it. And I graduated and I was an unqualified candidate that landed a job as a case manager in a children's hospital, which I'm also, I can talk about that. But one day I was sitting in my car ready to get out to go to work and I lost it. And I thought, I am not happy. This is not for me. This does not match my actual strengths and skills. Mm-hmm. And I'm sad all the time because I'm way too empathetic. And I thought, I messed up. I failed. I was the first in my family to graduate college and I blew it. And that's where that unbecoming started to happen, thankfully. And I started to realize, like, well, maybe this Mary Poppins bag of skills and things I know how to do could be used for something else.
Yeah.
And that started the most beautiful journey of, not gonna lie, being the most minimal qualified person to land probably every role I ever landed. And most recently, it was several years working in human resources, which I love, talent development, employee engagement, until April 2020, when I watched a career I'd been building for so many years slowly disintegrate in less than a week. Mm-hmm. And I found myself kind of at that place in my car again, right? Like, well, what do I do now? And I'm not kidding. During quarantine, people started to call me out of the blue, former coworkers, colleagues, friends. And they were like, can you help me? Because I've had now this big change up in my career, right? COVID has really impacted what my career looks like.
Right.
And I've realized either I'm not happy in what I'm doing, and if I could do it again, I would do it different, or I don't know what to do now. And I thought, why are they calling me? Like, is it because they know I'm like unemployed right now? And what I realized is it's just because I've been slowly building the skills to be a minimal qualified person applying for a job and knowing how to write a resume, knowing how to talk about myself in an interview, all right. those skills slowly led to today. Right. And it's funny. I say, it's like, it was a Moses moment. Once I realized what it was supposed to be, I thought, oh, okay. Well, yeah, I didn't see that coming, but sure.
But it makes sense.
But it makes sense. Yeah. So that's the long story.
Yeah. I love that story. And I just feel like the more that we chat, the more I'm like, oh my gosh, we really do have so much in common, because it sounds like you started kind of on accident. And that's what I say about Hustle Sanely. Like, I started Hustle Sanely on accident. I was just kind of, it's always those moments, either I feel like the breakdowns happen in the car or in the shower, where you're mm-hmm. just like, okay, mm-hmm. what I'm doing now isn't working. So I have to change something. And I do think, obviously, COVID was an intense time. But that is one really beautiful thing that kind of came out of it, is I feel like it gave people almost permission to start over if they didn't like how things were going. Like, it was kind of like a reset button in a way, especially when it comes to careers and jobs. I have so many friends who, during that time of 2020, that's when they decided to start their business, because they were just mm-hmm. sitting at home because they weren't able to go into their other job, or they were let go from their other job. So they had the space and kind of the mental capacity to see what else is out there, kind of see where their strengths are and how they can kind of tap into those a little bit. So I just think, I didn't know that that was your story. And so I think it's really rad to hear that that's kind of how it all tied together. And I love that you called it a Moses moment as well, because now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can relate to that so incredibly much. Mm-hmm. So that kind of brings me to my next question. What advice would you give to someone who isn't happy in their current career, but they just have no idea what career they want to pursue? Like, how does someone discover their dream career as an adult? Because Ooh. Like you mentioned a little bit earlier, like, I was under the same impression in high school. I was like, okay, I have to choose what I'm doing for the rest of my life while I'm 17 years old, like mm-hmm. no mm-hmm. pressure, but
no pressure.
You know? Yeah.
That's and, right.
Oh my gosh. When I was 17, I wanted to be a wedding planner, and I'm thinking back, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I did an internship in the industry and I hated it. I was like, oh my gosh, if I actually would have like went all in with that when I was 17 and, you know, done all that I need to do to get there, I would be so unhappy right now, just because it wasn't a good fit for me. So I'm just like, oh my gosh. Okay. So how does someone discover their dream career as an adult?
I just have to also say that I feel like we're stuck in the movie Parent Trap, because my first business I opened December 1st, 2014, I opened a wedding coordination business.
No way. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was the first time. So anyway, long story short. So this is what I would say to someone that, like you said, they've either realized, and you know, it's funny because that time, that downtime, especially people working remotely that hadn't had that opportunity before, realized, if I could do it again, would I have chosen this path? And they realized, like, I don't think I would. And that is a good start. So the first thing I would tell someone is, it's okay to feel lost, scared, unsure of a career path. That is okay. As a matter of fact, that's probably the human test. Is change scary? Yes, right. You're human.
Right. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah. Because I think we're taught early on that you need to decide what you want to be mm-hmm. and who you want to be, but you don't always know that. And your skills and your strengths and your interests change. So first and foremost, it's okay. You shouldn't feel guilty about it. It's worth exploring. I always say, if it's worth daydreaming about, it's worth exploring.
100%. I love that.
And it's the best advice I tell my clients is it's going to be hard for you to find something when you don't know what you're looking for. So I find people are looking at every job online and then they get really frustrated and like, oh my gosh, I don't know where to begin. And this reminds me of one of my favorite quotes in a book, and that's Alice in Wonderland. So when Alice is lost in the woods, all right, she is like, I have no idea what is going on. She runs into the cat, the Cheshire cat, and she asks for help. She says, cat, which way do I go? Mm-hmm. And the cat says, well, that depends. Where are you trying to get to? And she says, don't know. Not sure. And the cat says, well, if you don't know where you're trying to get, it doesn't matter which way you go. And I find that a lot of times people are kind of approaching the idea of a career change or a promotion with no idea of what they're looking to get out of it. What is that gap that they're either looking to fill? What is that need that they're trying to meet? So I would recommend that people start with an inventory of their strengths, an inventory of their skills, an assessment, if you will. There's a lot of assessments out there. Some are free, some are paid. But know what you bring to the table, because I am telling you, if you look at the trajectory of a career and a career path and strengths and interests, there are clues in those moments where you had to decide, you know, what am I going to do next? When you were realizing that you loved or hated your project or task or team or whatever that is, there's been breadcrumbs all the way that have showed you the types of things that you might like. So what we're looking for really is a through line. It's a common denominator. And I'd also say that change requires action. And sometimes that action is a small, scary, messy, imperfect step towards a goal. But there's so much clarity in the doing versus the wondering.
Yeah. Everything you just said, I'm like, I know you guys can't see, but I'm like nodding vigorously because it's just like everything you're explaining. Those are like the thoughts and feelings that I was experiencing throughout all of my 20s, basically. I have talked to my husband about this before while I was kind of hopping careers, because people ask me all the time, do you wish you would have started Hustle Sanely sooner? Like, do you feel like everything else was a waste of time? And I can truthfully say no. I don't think anything was a waste of time, because you called them breadcrumbs. And I say, I feel like I was just like on a scavenger hunt in my 20s. Like, I was just kind of going into each thing that I did with the mindset of like, okay, like what can I bring to this place? And like, what can this place teach me about myself, kind of a thing? And so I wouldn't have created Hustle Sanely if it wasn't for all of those puzzle pieces that kind of came together from all of the things that I've done in the past. And something else, while you were talking about the Alice in Wonderland example, I love that. I just kept hearing the phrase, like, instead of looking outward, like sometimes we need to look within. And I feel like sometimes we're so focused on like what's going on around us, what other people are telling us to do, what other people are doing themselves, when a lot of the time I think we need to kind of flip the compass around a little bit and just kind of turn inward. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. So what I say is that career transformation happens from the inside out.
Yep, exactly. Like spot on. Yes.
There's an internal shift that has to happen before an external action can happen. And similar to you, Jess, you were almost unlocking new levels of your skills, of your experience, of your strengths through your experience so that you can do something like Hustle Sanely.
Yes.
You know, you at 19, 20 years old, you may not have had the experience, the knowledge, the skill to say, okay, how would I do this? What would that next step look like?
Right.
And I think, you know, I often tell people when they're like, well, you know, I've been in this job for 10 years, or I went to school for this thing and I'm scared to change. I don't want to start from scratch. I tell them, you are not starting from scratch. You are starting from experience, which we've heard that. That is a beautiful cliche. We've heard 1,000 times. You are actually a better, well-rounded candidate for the next thing because of all the experience you have from the last thing.
Yes.
Now, what does that story look like? That's called a professional brand, but it's all about kind of putting those pieces together, like you said.
Right, right. And I want to emphasize too that, you know, it all does come together. Like nothing is wasted. Something that I feel like a lot of people get frustrated about is if they're in a career or a job position that they don't like it. Like it's just like a no for them all around. And I mm-hmm. feel like they just get, like I said, just kind of frustrated that they feel kind of stuck there. But I feel like, at least in my experience, like I shared with the wedding planning thing, I feel like checking that box as a no did help me get clarity. A no is still clarity. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's this funny analogy. So I basically understand the world through analogies, and that's part of my style of communicating.
I'm here for it. Yeah.
Okay. So I almost use it as like, do you ever play that game, Guess Who, where you have all the faces and you have to describe someone and then assess based on the characteristics?
When I was in the speech language pathology field, we played that game with our little kiddos literally every day. I'm very familiar with the game. Yes.
That's kind of how career exploration works.
Yeah.
You are just eliminating either categories or characteristics of a role to narrow it down to some viable options. It's not always one remaining. It might be five that are similar in maybe nature or role that's worth exploring.
That's such a good example, Jess. Oh my gosh. I love that.
Always an analogy for me.
Yes. I love it. Okay. So we've talked about like the feelings of like, okay, I understand that I'm unhappy and I want to make a change, right? But making that switch or that career transformation, it can feel like a really daunting or overwhelming task because it's so big. Like it's not a small thing. It's not like you check it off the box. Like you've spent an hour doing it and you're like, cool, got that off my to-do list. Like, no, it's a big, big thing. So can you give us like a peacefully productive process of a way to go about this? Like, what are the first three steps for someone who wants to switch careers, but they feel stuck where they're at? Whether they feel stuck because they feel guilty of leaving their current workplace, they're scared of change, or whatever the doubt or fear might be stemming from.
Absolutely. And I love how you said it in a peacefully productive way, because it is incremental and it can be done. So like I said, I think it starts from the inside out, right? So the first thing I'd recommend is understanding why you want or need the change. Why do you need it? What do you need? Identify current career needs. For this season of your life, what are the current needs that you have from a role? And what is missing? And what do you have that you want to continue on with in the next role? What would the next best role look like? What would those ingredients consist of? So I think you start by kind of identifying, because again, it'll be hard to find something if you don't know what you're looking for.
Right.
The next thing I'd recommend is weighing out options. And by that, I mean taking an honest assessment here. And this is a hard one, because when it comes to, like you said, people feel stuck, they feel guilty, they feel confused. Feelings are not always facts. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to put it on paper and assess, what is the cost of leaving? Mm-hmm. What is the cost of change? What am I afraid is going to happen here? How much of that is perceived? How much of that is actual? But also, what is the cost of staying? Mm-hmm. And what is the cost of remaining the same? Because you're going to sacrifice something on either end. That is your choice on which one it is. I think that's so important. And the last thing, this is about limiting belief work, because I'll tell you the most interesting thing is I have met and I've had the absolute honor of working with professionals in all kinds of industries at every type of level. And sometimes the most qualified, the most ambitious, the most successful professionals I have met are the ones that feel like the biggest imposter. So I've had people, and I've seen that resume, tell me that they're not qualified for a role that I absolutely know that they are.
Right.
And it just makes me feel like so human. Like, oh, everybody feels that, but feelings aren't always facts. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that limiting belief work of truly understanding what are those internal obstacles? What are external obstacles? Mm-hmm. How perceived and how actual are they? And that's not easy. And sometimes you have to put it on a post-it and stick it on a wall and remind yourself right. every day.
I was just about to say, I feel like getting it out of your brain and onto some sort of paper or document or something is huge, because that is kind of something that I did because I was terrified. I don't want to sit here and, you know, because what I do now, I'm so passionate about Hustle Sanely. I can't imagine doing anything else. And people see that like coming through on Instagram, the podcast, all that stuff. It didn't start like this. I was terrified to, because what I was doing right before this, I was in graduate school for speech language pathology. I was about halfway through my program, which means I had spent a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of energy toward becoming an SLP. And I really did genuinely enjoy the field. But Hustle Sanely kind of unfolded on the side. And I was like, oh, this is where my heart really is, kind of a thing. And I was just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, the pros and the cons. And it just, I felt like I was going around and around and around in my mind. But whenever I sat down and I got everything out and onto a piece of paper, the one question that I asked myself, and you kind of mentioned this, what is the worst thing that could happen? Like, what's it going to look like if I walk away from grad school and pursue Hustle Sanely full time? And I never really explicitly answered that question in my mind. I just kept asking it and like ruminating on it, mm-hmm. which made it really big and really scary. But when I finally sat down and answered the question and got it out on paper, I was like, okay, the worst thing that could happen, Hustle Sanely doesn't work out, and I go back to my graduate program. And then I looked at that on paper and I was like, that's really not that bad. Like, it's not a big deal at all. So I was able to kind of move forward with my decision because I sat down and did like the inner work, the limiting belief work, and got it out of my mind and onto paper. So I'm so glad that you mentioned, like, put it on a post-it note, like get it out of your brain.
You're so right. And I think, you know, when I sit with either an individual or an organization and we ask that question, what are the worst things? Mm-hmm. People sometimes have difficulty answering that because they've never said it out loud.
Right.
And what I tell people all the time is they're, unfortunately, the person you talk to the most all day is you, but that's an internal conversation that no one else can hear. So there's no one else to defend you in that very untrue statement that you're hearing, but it sounds like you, because it's your voice. Mm-hmm. So it sounds true, but there's nobody there. So I almost say, like, in my mind, when I think about careers, it's like a board of directors. Mm-hmm. And okay, fear is maybe one of those directors on the board, but so is courage, and so is discipline, and so is ambition. They should have a say as well, right?
I love that. All of these analogies, I am just like living for them. I'm like, yes, it puts everything into like such a digestible perspective. So please keep them coming. I love them. Okay. So we've kind of talked about how we might be feeling when it comes to kind of accepting that we no longer want to stay in the same career that we're in. We're ready to make a change. We've talked about some action steps, some things that we can do to kind of get the ball rolling, help us to kind of get out of that stuck place. So now I want to get into a little bit more, I guess, like nitty gritty type of stuff. So what are your three biggest resume no-nos? Like, we've decided that we're moving on, we're doing something different. We did the limiting belief work. We're ready to like do the dang thing. But now we're looking at our resume that we haven't updated in 12 years. And we're like, oh my gosh, like what is what on here?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. And I'll say for most people, they only update their resume every time they're looking for a new job, which is every what, 2-3 years.
Right.
So it can be daunting. The first thing is not using your resume like a place to list every skill and thing you've ever done. Mm-hmm. So the first no-no is overgeneralization. I see people put every hobby, every volunteer, everything, which if you're like an actor or actress, when you show up for a casting, you're supposed to list everything you've ever learned. Not the case for a resume, not at all. So an overgeneralized resume is not curated skills and experience. It's not strategic. It's essentially telling them everything you can do and hoping that the person on the other side of that document, the hiring manager, the recruiter, is able to basically, like an archaeologist, dig out right. the things that they actually need
that are relevant, right?
To find your qualifications. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do that. You want to make it easy peasy for them. So be specific. That was the kind of the first no-no. Okay. The next no-no is rounding down. And what I mean by that is not giving yourself the credit you deserve for the strengths, skills, and experience you have. Mm-hmm. So often when I'm talking to, let's say, a professional and they want to apply for that job and that job requires that they have experience in project management, I'll say, let's talk about your experience. And they say, well, I've kind of done that. Or, well, I guess maybe once or twice. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know what your job is. We've talked about it. Didn't you do this project? Oh, well, yeah, I guess so. And I'm like, okay. When you round down, you take a kinda and you make it a no. A kinda is a yes. So you want to give yourself full credit. You don't lie about it, right? They'll catch you.
Right.
Don't do that. But give yourself due credit. Mm-hmm. And people don't do that as well. And I understand having a humble heart, love it. Not the place for a resume. And the next no-no is really kind of formatting. And by that, I mean making it a non-user-friendly document. Mm-hmm. So if the titles aren't easy to find, right? If I can't quickly find what your skills are, if I can't quickly find what your experience is, if you have to go into your document and maneuver the margins,
oh gosh,
12 times to fit all the words, girl, you put too many. Like,
right.
Not necessary. So the formatting, no one is going to sit down and take 25 minutes to read through an incredibly busy document.
Right.
But if it's strategic and curated, they don't have to because only the highlighted things are shown, right? So those would be my three no-goes for resumes.
Perfect. And then that kind of dumps us into the next question. That's kind of like the follow-up. So those are the things, the no-nos. So what are the three best things that someone can have on their resume?
Yeah. And let me start by saying a resume is about you, but it's not for you.
That's good. I've never heard that. That is very good.
It's about you. It's not for you. It's for the reader. So if we think about it from that lens, it makes it easier to talk about the three must-haves. The first is what I call a professional summary. A professional summary is the modern objective statement. And let me tell you the difference. An objective statement is often what you're looking to get. I am looking for a role that allows me to do this. I am looking for the opportunity to do this thing. A professional summary is all about what you can give. It summarizes the contribution. It summarizes kind of like the inside flap of a book where it tells you what the book is about so that you want to read it.
Right.
That professional summary is your pitch. It's your opportunity to say, hey, this is what I bring to the table. This is what I can do for you. In a short, three sentence, easy, sum it up kind of a way. The next thing I love on a resume is a highlighted skill section that's tailored to the role. It helps the recruiter, the hiring manager quickly scan what are some of the most relevant things, like maybe softwares that you're using, skill sets, industry that you've worked in. What are those highlighted key points that would be the things that you want them to know about you up front? Mm-hmm. And the next thing, of course, is the professional experience that is the most relevant to the position and highlights your strengths and your achievements that you've done within that role, right? That you've grown within that role. I think, like I've said, it's difficult to, especially in this market, find a job with the exact same resume in the exact same wording in the same formatting that's going to work for everything. There's really going to be no one size fits all right now. So being able to curate that experience. And I have an analogy that's really weird. If we have time for it, I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, come on.
Okay, look. I think of a resume creation process like going to the grocery store. All right.
Okay.
Imagine rows and aisles of ingredients. if you've ever gone to a grocery store and you're kind of hungry, but you don't know what you're going to make, you just get all the things you like and you leave with Cheez-Its, mayonnaise, like
it's pickles. A terrifying experience, truly.
And when you get to the counter, there's no way they could guess what you're trying to make, right? This hodgepodge. But if we were to consider you going into, let's say, the grocery store of your life in aisles and rows of skills, experience, and strengths, and you walked in with a recipe, and that recipe is, oh, I don't know, the job description. And you said, what are the ingredients on this job description that they are looking for? And you walked through the aisles of your experience and you curated ingredients in your life, in your experience skills, that best match that ingredient list, and you put them in the cart, which is your resume. It's going to make the product, and that product is the job, right? The job description. So I know that's a weird, funky way of describing it, but I always see it like curate, be specific on what you're trying to make,
right?
And use a job description as an ingredient list.
My mind is blown because I feel like this is a no-brainer to curate your resume for the job that you're applying for. Okay, I'm gonna be honest. I do not have an up-to-date resume based on what I'm doing right now.
You know the right person.
Yeah. But in the past, I used to get so much anxiety around creating a resume. I think the last one that I had to put together was one to get into my graduate program. And I never thought about, I put so much pressure on me. I was like, okay, I have to throw up all of my like skills and experience onto this document. I never thought about, number one, viewing it as the reader while I'm making it. And number two, curating it for the specific experience. Because I feel like in high school, you were taught to just like, okay, every time you get a new job or a new opportunity or whatever, update your resume. So it made it seem like you have this like one giant rolling life document rather than like a curated thing that you're sending for a specific purpose. So I know what you're saying is so simple and a no-brainer, but I'm just like, oh my gosh, like this makes so much sense. And it would have made my resume creating days a lot less stressful, to be honest.
Sure. Well, the way that you think of it is the traditional way I think we're taught. Right.
Which is, I feel like is the case with a lot of things, like even choosing a career, like we talked about earlier, like we were taught to pick something when you're 17, 18, 19 and kind of roll with it the rest of your life. Cause that's what a lot of our parents and grandparents and so on, you know, we're accustomed to doing. But the world's different now and we're different. And just, I think we have to be a lot more flexible and dynamic. And the same thing goes for our resume. And I do have one more question about resumes that cause I was like, wait, if I was a listener, I would want to know this. Cause I feel like it's like a pinnacle question that people wonder about resumes. And yeah, I don't know, you hear like differing opinions. Is it supposed to be just one page?
that is the most common question.
Yeah.
This is what I tell people. I don't care. As someone that recruited, did human resources, the length of the document was not as important as the relevance to the content that was listed. So if you have 2 pages of relevant content, awesome.
Okay, great.
If you've done 2 pages because you think that makes you look more qualified, professional, but it's a lot of bullets of things that are not relevant, it actually does not work in your favor. So I would say 1 or 2 pages of the most relevant, curated, strategic content.
Perfect. Awesome. I just wanted to ask that because I was like, okay,
it's a great question.
I really want to know. Okay. So I kind of want to, I guess, turn the wheel a little bit. You're a business owner and you, I'm sure everybody can tell by your voice that you're very passionate about what you do. You love what you do, but I want to ask you some Hustle Sanely-esque questions now. So I want to know, how do you take care of your mental health as you're working toward your goals, like building your business, helping your clients? Like, how do you make sure that you're still showing up for you?
Oh, I love that question. You know, I feel like helping professionals do the worst job helping themselves, right? That's science. That's not even like my opinion. So I actually had to start by understanding my boundaries. And by that, I mean, I had to recognize what are my specific, unique signs of overwhelm. Mm. What do I look like when I am my best? What am I doing? What are my actions? What am I saying? What am I absorbing? Input, output. But what does it look like when I'm actually kind of stretched it? I should have taken a day off and I sure didn't. What am I saying? What am I doing? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? And so I kind of came up, not to be a psych major, but I feel like there are several models where they kind of use like a red, yellow, green, kind of a stoplight model. Mm-hmm. And the green is when you are your healthiest, most sure. boundary, you know, you're managing your boundaries. The yellow is when you're starting to get into a little bit of trouble. You mm-hmm. are slowing down a little bit. You're getting a little frustrated. And the red is when you waited too long to address it. So the way that I take care of my mental health is I got very clear in what that green zone is and what mm-hmm. that yellow zone is. And I will have to check in with myself. And sometimes I'll have to set an alarm on my phone, a daily alarm. That's like, stop, assess,
right,
make your next move. Because it gets really, the day goes by so quickly. It's mm-hmm. easy to get lost in the weeds. So I will probably have to put post-its and set a timer. To give myself some reminders. And of course, karaoke, come on.
Right. I'm going to be waiting to hear back on what my song is. Like, we're going to have to figure that out. But I love that I've never heard the stoplight analogy, because it really is like, yes, we are like one being, but there are different versions of us based on, like you said, like what we're kind of consuming, how we're treating ourselves, how we're speaking to ourselves. And so I think it's really helpful to kind of see like the three different versions, like the green, the yellow, and the red, and just being very clear about what fits under each color. Like, what am I doing when I'm green? What am I doing when I'm yellow? What am I doing when I'm red? So I think that's a really, really great exercise for people to kind of work through to help them figure out and get a little bit clear on just their needs. Because sometimes it's hard when you're like looking at a blank piece of paper and you're like, okay, cool. Like, what are my needs? Like, how can I take care of myself? Blank pages are always kind of daunting. You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
we need an exercise to follow. We need a game plan here. So I love that one. And then my last question for you, Jess, is what is your absolute favorite way to rest?
Either cuddled up on the couch with Allie, right? Reading a book. Or having a deep conversation with someone that has my full attention. And that's a weird thing to say, because you think like talking isn't resting. It is if you're an extrovert, like right. It fills me up. So it's funny. It's resting to me is being fully present, which is straight. It's a strange way to describe rest, but you know, in a life where there are many competing priorities, it's hard to be in the moment.
Totally.
So restful to me is in the moment, whatever that is.
I love that. And I like that you can kind of lean into that in whatever way you need to each day, each week. It might look different from day to day, from week to week, but just whatever being present looks and feels like in that moment is rest for you. And so I just love that you can kind of carry it through just like a lot of different ways in your life. That's beautiful. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Jess, again, thank you so much for jumping on with me and just sharing your heart and your wisdom with the Hustle Sanely community. This episode was packed with golden nuggets. So I want you to kind of let the community know, where can they go to learn more about you and the services that you have to offer and all that good stuff?
Absolutely. So the way I like to see it is there's a lot of resources out there for entrepreneurs, right? If you want to open a business, there's 1,000 resources, but if you're trying to like grow in your career, that's more limited. So hopefully either through my Instagram, now that you've kind of heard me, you won't be shocked that I'm a little quirky in my Instagram, but it's at Jess Matley, or my website, jessmatley.com.
Perfect. And I will have all of that linked in the show notes for you guys, so you can go hang out with Jess somewhere on the internet. I love following you on Instagram. I don't follow a ton of people on Instagram, but you are one that I look forward to. I love when people are on stories, like talking and like engaging. And that is something that you do so well. And I feel like if you guys like my style of Instagram stories, that you'll like Jess's too, because the quirkiness, it's a Jess thing. Like we figured this out. Yeah. But anyway, thank you again so much, Jess. And I hope you guys have the best day ever.
Thank you.
I so appreciate you tuning in to today's show. I hope that it blessed you right where you're at. If you did enjoy it, take a screenshot of the episode and share it on your Instagram story along with your biggest takeaway. Make sure you tag me at Jess M. Massey so I can see it and share it on my story too. Your feedback is such an encouragement to me and it helps the show more than you will ever know. If you want more Hustle Sanely in your life, head on over to jessicamassey.com. It's actually my favorite place to hang out online. I'll meet you right back here next week. And until then, keep hustling sanely.